Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. This is the first part of the CES 2021 analysis podcast. Since the knowledge is so thick, I decided to make two episodes out of this. So this week, episode one, next week, the next episode. At the beginning, an intimate confession. I love Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. I love this totally virtual, this artificial worlds that they create there. Everything is so unreal, but totally real. It's exaggerated, it's vital, it's a totally different kind of lifestyle, and it very much differs on the many aspects from the lifestyles and the way of life in the rest of North America. Las Vegas is full of third places, as Christian Mikuna defines them in his marketing book. And there are places where you are, where you be, and where you're in public, and there that are neither your home nor your office. They're a third place. And Las Vegas is full of these third places. There's glitter everywhere. There's glamour everywhere. There's music. And by the way, if you want to travel from New York to Paris to Asian Rome and then to Venice at Las Vegas, this is just a 90 minutes walk. You start the south of the strip and walk up all the way to the north, and then you can see all these places and can see all this. Since I started my own business in 2015, since the CES 2016, I have been there every year, every January. It is a great opportunity for me to start the year, to meet people, to talk to people, to refocus my business, to get latest trends. And so, yeah, I've been there everywhere. And of course, I would have been at Las Vegas this year as well. But the CTA, the organizer of the CTS, decided in late summer to run a purely digital, purely virtual event, everything on the internet. And I experienced that as extremely dry, pretty boring, and comparably negative user experience I had. And for me, I mean, I had known this before, but I learned it again. Humans are multimodal beings. We are real analog beings. We need real analog world around us to communicate and to feel good. So there were no face-to-face meetings, no coincidences, not meeting someone on a hallway somewhere I had not seen for a year or two or three and having a quick chat. And there is no real interaction. And so for me, it was okay to have this digital experience. Was better than nothing, but not the real thing. What I did is I attended the digital keynotes that related around cars, that related around HMIs, human-machine interface technologies, about artificial intelligence. And I attended a couple of digital booths of the bigger exhibitors. The keynotes often were advertising videos, high glossy, glancy, produced, very well produced videos, pre-produced. But sometimes also very good lectures, keynotes, and lively discussions that were held. The digital booths were sometimes pretty well done. A lot of information, sometimes downloads that you could use. Could also arrange meetings there with booth staff. But sometimes they were also completely empty. There was nothing. And from one of the American, Italian-American car makers, I just received the message that I'm using the wrong browser. I should use a different browser, and then I would have been allowed to attend the booth. I mean, that's definitely not the kind of user experience that we want to have in this context. Anyway, I condensed all the information I collected there, put it here into this podcast, and I will talk about four different aspects. One is mobility in general, but also, of course, with a very strong focus on the automotive industry. The second one is future experiences in the car. One of the companies I worked for many years, they have their booth in the analog and the real CES events, not on the exhibition grounds, but in a separate hotel a few minutes away. And also they had a separate keynote presentation of 45 minutes a few days before all the others had this. But I integrate this into this podcast, and they talked a lot about future user experiences. So core of this part will be that first tier supplier. Then I will talk a bit about automotive HMIs, and I will talk about artificial intelligence. There were a few events circling around that one, and the very last one I saw was a discussion between a professor from Israel and a writer, a journalist from the New York Times. And they discussed about artificial intelligence, and they had some super interesting views on this one, on the status and on the future. One fascinating thought I took away from all the keynotes, the idea behind flying to the moon was not to bring a few stones, a few rocks back to Earth, but to see our Earth from space, to see the globe in space, and to then rearrange, refocus, to see ourselves in a different way. And I found this a very fascinating thought, and yeah, that one carried me through most of the CES. Okay, first part, mobility. The pre-corona trends will persist. Some of them will accelerate, some of them will slow down, but the CASE mantra, CASE stands for connected, automated, shared, and electric. So this mantra will remain, this will stay, and this will shape the future of the automotive industry. One interesting side fact is only 20% of workers will return to the offices fully after Corona, which means 80% of the people working in offices will remain in home office fully or at least partially. And this will heavily influence mobility. This will influence our urban areas, our inner city areas, our office areas, So that will have a serious impact on the future. All right, let's run through the CASE connected autonomous shared and electric mantra. The C, the connected mobility. The growing communication between vehicles and infrastructure will allow completely new use cases and services. We do not yet have a clear idea of what exactly these services will be, what these use cases will be, but the exchange of data between vehicles and the infrastructure, the road furniture, all the traffic lights, the traffic signs, other traffic participants, curbs, everything will be somehow communicating in a way. And since this data communication will be centralized and run through service, and probably there will also be artificial intelligence added to that, and that will allow new use cases and new services that we cannot yet really foresee. The technical possibilities, the status of the technology, and also the technological challenges for connected cars, they are visible. A lot of that is already solved. Every new car that is coming to the market that is sold today is somehow connected. And if it is only a Bluetooth connection to the head unit, and then the head unit sends data to or allows connectivity, internet, hands-free phone calls. So all that is possible. So the technological background is more or less clear. The use cases are not fully defined, not fully visible. And my belief is that very smart people from the automotive world, from the computing networking world, from the app and the smartphone world, they will find new use cases, and users will grow with that, and then users will formulate, will express their own use cases and their own needs, so that we will see many, many new applications with connected cars. Connected mobility will allow new types of activities in urban areas. Cities will be different. Cities will change with connected mobility. And we will get more space. We will use space in a different way. But we will also travel differently in urban areas. And we will focus on different or new aspects of mobility with connected cars. One example, 20% of all traffic jams come from vehicles whose drivers are looking for a parking space. So, I mean, 20% of all traffic that really annoys us is coming from people that just don't know where to drop their car, that drive down the road and try to get rid of it. And this can be reduced with connected cars. So if I have a fully connected city, if I know where an open parking space is, then I can make a reservation, I can be guided there, then it is open there, I just drive there straight, drop the car and leave it. And far easier, less traffic jams. In the future, cars will not only be nodes in the digital network, in the Internet of Things. I mean, they are parts of this, and they're rolling computers, they're rolling nodes of the Internet, rolling nodes of the Internet. But cars will also be part of social networks. They will be knots in any kind of social, either digital or personal network. So, for example, with shared vehicles that we can call, and we may meet new people in this car, and we may like it or not, but it's a social interaction that we will have in this. We will have social networks. We will have communication over the social networks from connected cars and with connected cars and through connected cars. So they will be digital network nodes, but also social network nodes. Second, autonomous driving. The development and innovation focus of the moment in automated driving, autonomous driving, is on urban transport, it's on inner city transport. There's a lot of activities on highways as well, but since the traffic situation on highways is clearly less complex than in urban areas, we can see good ADAS, advanced driver assistance systems, there on the road already, and that will grow. But the focus, the innovation focus, the development focus at the moment is in urban transport. And people target for autonomous driving in cities for at least higher levels of automation in cities. One of the big construction machinery companies had a very interesting keynote on autonomous driving. They are producing many of the vehicles you can see in mines, in open mines. For example, these huge trucks they're huge trucks, bigger than any truck you can see on a road, these mining trucks. And they are driving fully autonomous. There is no driver on board anymore. Then there are other vehicles there that are partially automated, and then there are fully manual vehicles also on these grounds in these mines. And they solve many of the issues for this environment there that we are discussing now for urban traffic, for car, for automotive, for any kind of car travel that we have. And that is reality there. So they have these fully autonomous cars there, these trucks. They allow the remote control of vehicles. So they are workers that do not sit in the vehicle, but in an office space where you have clean air and no noise and no vibrations. And we have a very nice, very good office style kind of environment. And they then steer these vehicles over remote controls. They have a full cockpit and have a regular car seat there. And then they have the opportunity to make remote controls of these vehicles. And then they have the manual vehicles. There are a couple of cars driving on these grounds with people in it, with a human driver. And what they do is in these mines is they have fully coordinated control over the entire fleet. Every car is sending data. It is coordinated in a coordination room, and they're giving advice to the vehicles. They're controlling everything there. They have data exchange between the vehicles, so they have a direct vehicle-to-vehicle data exchange. So if they have this mixed traffic and one of these autonomous trucks realizes, okay, there is a car with a human driver, there's a manned vehicle, then I will keep a larger distance, and to unmanned vehicles, they have a smaller distance. So everything is fully coordinated in this fenced environment that they have in these mines. But to me, it seems like many of the problems we're discussing are already solved in that environment, and I find this super, super interesting. What else on automated driving? We see a growing coordination between vehicles and infrastructure. I see this as essential to get a smooth, automated, and even more autonomous driving. So if you have an unmanned car, if there is no one in there, driverless car, then you will need a strong coordination between vehicle and infrastructure, a strong data exchange. In the earlier times of autonomous driving, a few people believed that you can do this without communication infrastructure. Theoretically, that is possible, but reality shows that we need the coordination between vehicle and infrastructure. And for automated driving, we will see increased data processing within the vehicle, which means that we will have more computing power, more data exchange, more CAN buses, more bus systems in the car that will allow the entire steering, the entire driving, the safe driving procedures of automated cars. Specific applications such as automated parking are established. They are there. You can use this. And these have basically two targets. One is the convenience for the customer. That is the positive user experience that we create. And the other one is a better use of the infrastructure. So if you have an automated parking, the parking lots may be smaller. I can crunch more cars into it because cars are better in parking themselves than the humans are. So these are the big two points that you get out of certain applications in automated driving. The HMI, the human-machine interface, the communication between driver and car, between human and machine, will gain importance consistently over time because we have to control the autonomous driving functions, the automation of the car, and we have to design the division of tasks between humans and vehicles. So if you have a shared task, then you need to communicate to the driver who is doing what. What is the car doing? What is the driver doing? And we need to have a clear HMI design to get a clear and undoubtful and trustful communication between the car and the driver. So the HMI will gain importance in automated driving scenarios. We have shared mobility. Third point in the first part here, in the mobility part. Shared mobility will lead to more space in cities. If you have a look outside your window, you will see that there are parked cars. I mean, wherever you are, there's parking spaces. And a regular, normal car, a privately owned car, is driving just 5% of its lifetime, meaning 95% of its lifetime, it's just standing somewhere. It is eating up space and doing nothing. And this is one of the big change makers in shared mobility. We will not need all these parking lots and all these parking houses, all these infrastructures that we have created to just drop a car and leave it there once these cars are shared, when they drive more. And this will change the infrastructure of urban areas, of cities, of inner city areas drastically. We can use all this space for something else, for humans, for other means of mobility, for living, for being, for enjoying. So that will be a big game changer. On the other hand, shared mobility will create more traffic. If I share a car, it will probably not be right in front of my house door, I need to call it. And so it may drive a detour to pick me up or to drop me somewhere. And so they will drive longer distances, and then we will create more traffic with these shared cars, which again will influence our urban areas. And we will need to find solutions for that. Another point on shared mobility, the corona pandemic has changed the awareness of humans, the attitude of users, when it is about sharing objects. So we all learned a lot in the past year about hygienic measures, about how viruses and bacteria spread. And so hygiene has become a central point, a focus point in car sharing. So how can I ensure that a car is not contagious, that it is safe to be in there when I enter a shared car? And from my point of view, these thoughts, this change in awareness on these hygiene, on how bacteria and viruses spread, that will remain, and that will be one of the changes we will see based on the pandemic. And this will influence the development of shared mobility. What we can do is we can think about new cleaning options, on opportunities, on ways of cleaning a car in between two users or when new users come in. This may be ultraviolet light, this may be other cleaning mechanism, physical or chemical ones that we can use. I know that in the pipelines of the material producers, new fabrics and new surfaces are under development that are more hygienic and that provide a higher level of cleanliness than today's fabrics and surfaces. Another point is filtering the air in shared vehicles to have cleaner air and to get the viruses out there. It is contactless mobility. So, mobility itself, the car driving in a capsule, in a vehicle, will never be contactless because I have to sit somewhere and I need to hold on maybe. And so there will be things where I have contact with a shared vehicle. But booking them, interacting with the vehicles, getting entrance to the vehicles, that may be organized contactless. Either, for example, through my smartphone, that I do bookings, reservations through my smartphone, that I enter with a virus detection, with an iris detection. So I just need to look at a camera and it detects me and the doors open. Maybe I can use gesture recognition to have a contact input of my destination, or voice is also contactless. So there are many technologies out there that will allow a reduction of contacts between user and shared car. The future of mobility must be seamless. The switch between modes, the different use cases I have, from selection to booking to reservation to entering, payment, leaving, all that must be a seamless, simple, and trustworthy procedure to get it going. Last point in the case mantra is electric, the electric mobility. First of all, there are two core points that create the biggest problem of electromobility that I see, that's range anxiety, that create uncertainty about the range. One is the duration of the charging process. So we are all aware that, at least as of today, if I want to load 300 miles into a car with a gasoline or diesel engine, that takes me 5 minutes. The same procedure, putting 300 miles into a car for an electric vehicle, takes maybe up to an hour, 2-3 hours, depending on the charging means that I have. So it's the duration of the charging is one big point. And the other one is the availability of charging options. So we have many, many gas stations out there, and they all have different fuel pumps. So it is pretty easy to just drive there, spend the 5 minutes to fill up the car and go. That is different, at least as of today, for charging points for electric vehicles. The number is lower, the cars are standing there for a longer time. And I mean, I'm seriously thinking about getting an electric car as my next vehicle. The biggest problem I see is that I cannot charge it. I mean, I have a parking place in the backyard of my house, but it will be extremely difficult, up to impossible, to mount a wall box there. And I do not have an alternative. There are no public charging points here. And so the availability of charging points, of charging options, is definitely hindering the spread of electric mobility. Another point that was discussed is what do we do with the driver during the charging process? And if it's only 20 minutes, I mean, it's 20 minutes. And that will end up with shopping and food. I mean, people can go, can shop while their car is charged, or they can get a coffee, they can get something to eat. I think that will be the prominent, those two will be the prominent activities people will have when they wait while their electric car is charged. We need to think about business models and pricing. They are the next big topics in electromobility. Business model by means of how can I charge, where can I charge, how can I pay. In Europe, it is a disaster if you go cross-border. For example, travel from Germany to the Netherlands or to France. It's very difficult to charge your electric vehicle, because you have to have an account, you have to have a card or an app or whatever. You need to register before you're allowed to charge somewhere. And I mean, this is ridiculous, and we need to solve this one. Of course, the electricity providers, they see a big business in pulling the people into their part of business, into their business models, and getting paid for that. But this does not at all help in making electric mobility more convenient. Other point is pricing. We will see different pricing models as we see it in the smartphone areas. There are a few pricing models, other like prepaid or flat rate, whatever. All that will come in the future, so that we will have different models to choose from when we charge our electric cars. The battery, the electric battery in a car, is a very sensitive piece of technology. It needs a lot of maintenance. We need to take care of the batteries. They need to be cooled. To get a longer lifetime, you have to use it in a certain way, not overcharge it, not undercharge it. You have to charge it in a regular way. You have to charge it in a certain rhythm, and that will be performed by so-called battery cloud services, probably backed up by artificial intelligence. These battery cloud services will arrange the entire charging procedure, the charging schedules that will be connected with your personal schedule, with your plans, with your travel plans. And then you get an optimized battery life based on these battery cloud services that we see. We will see in the future mobility on demand. I mean, there are a few models visible already out there. They will grow, they will expand, they will get more variations, they will be more personalized. So you can buy mobility for certain periods of time. Today we do a car leasing maybe for 3 years, which is the regular established model, but you can see models at the moment where it's just 3 months, or can even go down to minutes or hours or days of mobility that you buy when you have a certain need for it, when you have a demand. And then you can buy exactly the kind of mobility that is most helpful for you in that context. There are three topics that will influence future mobility. The presenter talked about buckets. There are three buckets of problems, of issues that we need to solve in future mobility. One is the legislation. Where do certain rules apply? How do they apply? I mean, we have the different legislation within states, within countries. And one example, you can use the in-vehicle cameras and the external cameras for surveillance of your car. You park your car somewhere, you can then walk away, and then you have a look at your smartphone, and you can get access to these cameras, and you can find around who is around the car, who is inside the car, is the car still where it is supposed to be. So all this is possible, but at least in Germany, from a legal point of view, scenarios like this ones, due to privacy, are extremely hard to realize. So we need to have a look at legislation, because that will shape future mobility and the experiences we have with this. The second one is in general the issue of connectivity. The first one is, who pays for it? Who's paying the connectivity cost that we have? Probably at the end it will be the user, one way or the other. The other bigger issue connected with connectivity is, to whom does the data belong? Who owns the data? Is it the driver? I mean, it's my data. I'm producing it. It's my behavior. It's my travels. It's my driving. So, yeah, it should be my data. It can also be the first-tier supplier that collects it in the car, that aggregates it in the car, that sends it out to external instances. It can be the data provider, the company that transfers the data, that organizes that one. It may be the data center. It may be the OEM, the car maker, because it's his car that is driving there on the road. Is it the data of the OEM, or is it the data? I mean, if I have a shared vehicle service, is it the data of the service provider of the company that runs the mobility service? So that is totally unclear. It is clear that this data is extremely valuable, that we can use it to create new services, to personalize services, to predict behavior, to steer entire fleets. So all this is important if we talk about the data that we have and the ownership of data. And a third point, the third bucket that will influence future mobility is the growing technical and organizational complexity that we have. No single business, no single company is capable today, and not to talk about the future, to handle the entire ecosystem of cars, of data, of traffic infrastructure, of services, of payments, of whatever. So no single company is any longer able to plan, develop, implement, maintain, offer all these different services. So already today we have comparably complex ecosystems of companies and organizations steering the system that will grow in the future, both from a technical, but from our point of view, first of all, from an organizational point of view, and that will be quite some hiccups until we have the entire system running. This is the end of the first part of this ES 2021 podcast. The next episode will cover the second part of this podcast. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.